All right, welcome to Lecture 2 for this 2014-15 academic year with the junior and senior high class. We are studying American history this year, and I'm introducing you to that topic by starting off with a little segment about what history is and what value it can have for us. And I'm trying to impart that particular lesson by the title that's in the title of our lecture, which is "You Are Here." So today, hopefully, that's going to come together into kind of a clearer notion as to why we've been discussing this subject of. And why you had this homework assignment last night about where are you? And so hopefully today it'll become kind of crystal clear as to what the significance of that was. So let me start by saying, with regard to the homework, thank you very much. The answers were fantastic. And so remember, I was talking about how Socrates would teach by asking questions. Well, one amazing thing is that when you are a teacher and you ask questions of students, the experience can be very profound, and you can actually learn so much yourself. Teaching, I have never learned as much in my life as I have from teaching. So it's just wonderful when you can assign people a question like I did, and see that you guys have really very original ways of thinking, and just you had some wonderful insights into this question. So I thank you very much for your answers, and I want to share with you a few of the most insightful, most interesting answers that I received, which I think are a good lead up to exactly what I intended, which was to show you something very important about history as a subject. So let's take a look at some of these answers. Like, now, of course, a fair number of people answered quite in a basic sort of way, saying, well, I'm at my desk, I'm at a room in my house. What they said, what city they were in, what state if they knew, and what country, and so on, right? So all that's just fine and good. I mean, that's the most basic way and that you would expect people to answer, right? Most people, if you ask them, where are you? Well, what you do when somebody asks you that is you basically look around and you name the place where you are. So it's, you know, that's kind of what I expected. But at the same time, I got some other answers that were, I think, very interesting, fascinating, unexpected in some ways. And so I really appreciate the thought that went into these. And so I want to tell you a couple of them that were kind of interesting, and hopefully this will kind of lead to or crescendo up to an interesting outcome here. So I want to tell you a couple of answers from my younger students, actually. Some of them are really kind of fascinating. So I had a younger student tell me the following. I am in a house that is 97 years old. So this was the question, where are you? And the answer was, I am in a house that is 97 years old. So now, obviously the part about that is a little extra and that's a little bit interesting is the 97 years old part, right? I am in a house, that's the basic thing. Everybody knows, everybody can kind of name that thing. But this younger student, really young, I don't know, maybe about 7 years old, this student said, I'm in a house that's 97 years old. So what he was saying was, this is a special feature of the house that I am aware of and that I perceive, that I kind of know about it. And I think it's interesting and I wanted to tell you. And so it's something that he carries around with him, a knowledge that the house is 97 years old, which is pretty cool. Most houses are not that old. Most people, of course, don't live that long. So this house is really old. That's a neat thing. And the point here is that the student was thinking about the question, where am I, in a slightly different way, right? Adding a little bit of an extra dimension to the question. And that's kind of what I was looking at. I was looking for people to come at that question kind of from the side or from a different perspective than the basic question, the basic physical question. And so here's another example of that. I had a student tell me, I am at 49 degrees north, 121 degrees west. Did you catch that? What was that student saying? You understand the reference? Hopefully you guys know your geography. Timothy?
He was saying his longitude and latitude.
Yeah, right. His coordinates in a lat-long reference frame. So this is kind of neat. If I share my desktop with you guys, and yesterday's classes had some glitches. One of the classes, the elementary class, did not record the sharing of the desktop. So I was very disappointed with that. And I'm having WebEx look into it. But for today, I'm just trying to experiment with sharing different things. I'm going to be typing in the whiteboard. I'm going to be doing a few different things just to see if I can't get the imagery to liven up a bit and to give you different things to look at. And so the student said, I am at 49 degrees north. So, let me get the annotation tool. Let's see what I can do with that. 49 degrees north, 121 degrees west. Cool, right? I mean, this was a very interesting answer to the question, where am I? This is a very universal reference frame, and it says, you know, wherever you are, you can find me. You can look on a map and you can find me. And it's basically a way of answering the question by using the science of geography, which is kind of a non-obvious answer. Right? I like that answer. Geography is definitely a subject that tells us more about where we are than we can just see with our eyes. Right? We cannot see this thing that we are looking at right now, this map of the world that we live in. You can't just see it. I mean, even if you are fortunate enough to be an astronaut and go up into space and you look down on the Earth, you can't see all this. Right? Because you can't see the entire surface of it all at once. So geography is a really cool way of expanding our awareness of this place that we're at, that we live, right? It's of giving us kind of a wider perspective on things. So I like that too. So we see the common denominator here between these perspectives that I thought were really interesting. The way that students did this was they were adding a dimension. They were adding a quality to the answer beyond just physical location, right? So here's the final one. And this was from Piper. So thank you, Piper. And it was I really enjoyed your answers. And so Piper said, this was one of the things that Piper said. She said, I am 19 minutes away from my best friend. That's a way of describing where you are, right? So what did she do? What dimension did she add to this question of location? This question, which on the surface is very basic. What does that add to see that, to perceive your place in that way? What's the new dimension here? How would you articulate that? Alexander, go ahead.
Time in a car or maybe on foot from somebody that's important. to her?
Okay, right. And so yeah, I think the last part is the crucial thing here, is that space, the place where you are, is related to your values. That there's a dimension in our human experience of place that's deeper than just location. We can look at location lots of ways. We can think about where we are in lots of different ways. We don't just see the place where we are with our eyes. We see it because we are alive. Bria, that's a nice comment, right? And it involves our values. So yeah, Bria, yeah, she added the dimension. Piper added the dimension of life. She added the valuing capacity that she experiences, and so this is part of how I think of where I am. That makes sense. That's really good. That is true. Let me give you another example that's similar to that, that doesn't have anything to do with distance, but really which just focuses on this added dimension to our perception of place. Tell me, what is the difference between the concept house and the concept home? Those are not, they can be used synonymously, right? But they are not the same concept. So, Timothy, what's the difference?
The difference is anyone's home is a house, but you only, well, only the houses you own are technically your home. If you have, normally people have one house and that's their home. And some people have like three houses and those three houses are their homes. But if they went into like a neighbor's house, that wouldn't be their home, but they'd still be going into a house.
Yeah, right. So what's the difference? What's missing from that house that doesn't make it a home anymore?
It's not. It's they don't own it.
Okay, so that is definitely one way to answer that question, ownership. I agree. But it's possible to own a house and not have it be a home. So that's, I don't think ownership is key or essential to the concept of home. I think there's a little bit more to it. Bria, what was your answer?
The answer is a house is a place.
Mm-hmm.
But the home is where your heart is.
Right, exactly. So home involves this dimension of values, right? Once again, similar to what Piper was saying about how she's 19 minutes away from your friend. The concept home is a more complicated concept than house, isn't it? It's got more layers to it. Do any of you remember from last year when we were studying philosophy what that's called? When a concept is more abstract, what are those layers called in a concept? Timothy, are you trying to answer that?
Oh, sorry, I forgot.
Okay, yeah. What are those layers in an idea? As you kind of peel it back and look underneath, you look at the definition and you see other ideas in the definition, and underneath those, you look at the definition of those ideas and so on. So the more complicated an idea is, the more ideas actually are inside of it. Home is a more complex idea than house. Right? You guys forget the word. The word is hierarchy. Right? The idea of a house is part of the hierarchy of the idea home, but not the reverse, right? It's one of those layers inside of the idea of a home. A home is a house, but not every house is a home. Did you get that? Right? Not every house is a home. You gotta have something extra. You gotta have another layer. You gotta have a dimension to it. And so I would say simply that, as Bria said, a home is where the heart is. A home is, usually it's kind of where your family is. is, right? There's that dimension of it. It's where you live, where you feel comfortable, where you like to be, where you feel at home, right? There's that. I'm using the same concept again there, which is a little bit of a problem, but you get the notion there. If we wanted to be really philosophical, we'd have to analyze it really closely. But basically, it's where you live and where your values are and where you feel comfortable. Okay, so that's an extra dimension. See, again, where are you? If you say, I am in a house, well, that is pretty bland. It's pretty dry, isn't it? But if you say, I am home, that's a big difference. That means a lot more. Okay, so there's that. So do you see the layers that are involved here? Right, in the answers? Piper was including this extra layer of a reference to a friend, right, of her values. And Nemo was including this extra layer of geographical science, right? And so now in this concept of home, we have this extra layer that it's beyond what's visible. You can't see home. That concept is not visible, right? You can see a house. You can't see home. It's an idea, right? And so that gets us closer to the topic of history and this concept of you are here. What I want to introduce you to is the idea that history is a way of answering the question, where am I? History is a special way of looking at the world and answering that question, where am I? Specifically, by looking at the past. But this can be a trap for people. This can be a trap. Now I'm going to switch to a whiteboard and I'm going to type a little bit on the whiteboard. And hopefully that will also be very visible to everybody. So when I type on the whiteboard, I type and you guys can't see it. And then it shows up after I'm finished typing. So let me just go ahead and type quickly here. I'm pretty good at typing. And stop there. Okay? So a very common perspective about history is this. That history is the study of the past. Right? That is how most people would define what history is. Okay? But there's a problem with this definition. There are, in fact, multiple problems with this definition. I would say that if you're doing it right, this actually is not even true. This is not close enough to the truth to be a good definition. It's not even a decent working definition. In fact, it's outright wrong. So, my gosh. What's the alternative then? What is it that I want you to think or to a perspective that I want you to adopt about history and that we're going to be really focusing on throughout the year? Let me type out an alternate definition and talk about that here. Just take me a second. Done. All right. Hold me. Did that get too big? Can you see all of that? I need a little bit of a pointer here. You can see all of it, Alexander, including the word we is not cut off because it's cut off on my screen. All right. Let me zoom out. There we go. Okay. So hopefully that now. It is cut off, Timothy says. Now, if I zoom out some more and then I synchronize for you. Is that better now, Timothy? Now it's good? Okay, good. Awesome. All right, so that made it better. That's important for me to know. Okay? So, look at this definition here and think about what the difference is. History is the study of the world we live in. Yeah, I know. I have the gray line too, which is annoying. I'm sorry. I'll see what I can do about that in the future. All right. So, anyway, history is the study of the world we live in from a certain perspective. From the perspective of how it came to be, especially through human action. So, let's ponder that a little bit by, I don't want to zoom out. I want to zoom in, get that back. Now let me do this, synchronize for all. Hopefully that's okay. So I want to give you some examples of what I mean by this. History is the study of the world we live in from the perspective of how it came to be, especially through human action, rather than, as opposed to, in contrast to, the idea that history is the study of the past. Okay, so I'm going to share my desk. No, wait a minute. I'm going to share an application again. Hopefully, it will show up for everybody and maybe resolve the gray bar issue. I don't know about that. Whoops, I don't want that one just yet. Okay. Yeah, and I kind of spoiled it here by labeling everything. I would have preferred to have just the images. But anyway, are you guys seeing the image? Let me just confirm that the live folks at least are seeing the image, even if I hope the recorded students will also get a chance. Okay, thank you. So let me tell you about something that happened 800 years ago. Some of you may already know something about it, right? But 800 years ago, some Englishmen, the guys on the left over there, rebelled against their king, and they fought a war against him. The king is right here in with the little crown on his head. On the right-hand side of the table. Hopefully you can see. Can you guys see my cursor? Yes. Okay, good. So they rebelled against the king, and they fought a war against him, and they captured him, and they forced him to sign this piece of paper that's there in front of him. Now, people rebelling against a king in the past, that happens a lot, and quite frankly, it's pretty uninteresting. That happens a lot in the past. What's interesting about this event, and why it's not just about the past, is what they did after they captured him. This forcing him to sign this document called a charter that said from now on, the king has to follow the law. The laws specifically that are laid out in the charter. And by fixing his signature on it, he was assenting to the law and saying, from now on, I, the king, will follow this particular set of rules. Now, so what does that have to do with the world we live in? Well, we need a little bit of a bridge. Because that is quite distant from us, quite different from our world. We don't live in a world with kings. We have a very different type of society nowadays. Most people in the world do not live with a government that has a king. So, all right, what does this have to do with us then? Well, a little while later, some other Englishmen had an argument with the king again. You recognize these guys? They had an argument with the king, and they said, well, you know what? This idea that the people of the world have got to, on a regular basis, fight wars against their own king and against their own fellow subjects and citizens of the king, and to constantly have to do this in order to be protected from tyrants, this whole idea is not good enough. And so we can do better. We can make a whole new kind of country. And I assume somebody here can tell me which one it is that they made. Real question, of course. All right, Timothy.
The United States of America.
United States of America. Okay, let me zoom out a little bit. Right, so, signing of the Declaration of Independence. So, we have these two events from the past. We have this Magna Carta that was an event, the signing of them over 800 years ago, or almost 800 years ago, rather. And then we have this other event, the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And what do they... These are things that happened in the past. That's absolutely true. But they led to the world that we live in. The founding fathers of the United States, who were Englishmen, who had inherited a certain way of looking at the world from these people up here, came into it, saw the world that they lived in, understood that it wasn't good enough, resolved to change it, and did so, and they changed it into the world that we live in. And in that world, there is a recognition, not a very strong one right now, but there has been a recognition that individuals have rights. And that rights are not something that you have to bargain about. Certainly not that you should have to bargain about, that rights are, and we will learn this term very carefully this year, inalienable. If you don't know what that means quite yet, you will. And that among these rights are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And nobody else has a right to take these rights away from you, including Bria, by voting, which is the difference between a government as it was created by the founding fathers, which they named a republic, and another kind of government, which, as it turns out, is not as good and which is actually dangerous in some regards, which is called a democracy. So we have this fascinating thing where we live today in the outcome of the actions that these people took 800 years ago, and then as a follow-up 240 years ago. And here we are now in the product, a world that is basically the product of the actions that these people took. That is not visible, right? It's not, well, it is, but not directly. What's visible is the computer in front of you. What's visible is the desk that it's lying on. And so on. Right? So that's obvious. But history is about seeing that all of that, and the very fact that you are here, depends on this. Is that a compelling truth to you? Is that true? Does that feel real to you? It's okay if it doesn't. It's okay if it doesn't. Alexander?
Yes, it feels pretty real to me.
Okay, let me make it more real. I'm going to make it really real here for you. In a republic, you get to homeschool. Now, that is way more profound than you might realize. Let me tell you about a country that's not a republic, and invite you to consider the difference between what is a republic and what is not. What happens? Does anybody know What happens if you homeschool, or try to, rather, homeschool in Germany? Now, people think, oh, Germany is a nice advanced country, and they make really good cars, and they seem to have a pretty good life and everything, and, you know, it's a pretty, people usually think that's a pretty nice place, right? Okay, but Germany's not a republic. They might have that word in the name of their country and everything, but it's not. A lot of countries have the word republic in their name, but they're not republics. So we're going to have to figure that out this year, what that means. But Bria, no, you are exaggerating, but that unfortunately is part of the story of Germany. Yes, which is the absolute extreme thing that happened in the past, in World War II, the Holocaust. And we'll talk about that briefly this year. But if you try to homeschool in Germany right now, your parents will be arrested and imprisoned. And the government will take you, the children, out of your home, and they will place you in foster care, and they will force you to attend public school. That's it. In a country like that, you don't have a right to homeschool. Now that is deeply significant. The very thing that you are doing right now in a place other than the United States could get you separated from your parents for the rest of your childhood and forced into foster care and into public school. Can you imagine how devastating that would be? So we should all thank the founding fathers here for a second, and we can even thank the barons of England for rebelling against King John. We can all thank these people. Why? Because they fought to create a world where we have certain rights that are protected. Most of the people in these images are heroes that did some amazing things of which we are the beneficiaries. The fact that we are here able to have this class, it would be impossible without the people that are on the screen right now. Absolutely impossible. So thank you very much to the founding fathers of the United States, whom we will study, of course, in quite extensive detail this year. And by the way, in case you didn't know, the founding fathers were homeschooled. It's very interesting. I think homeschooling is possibly one of the most important institutions that can exist in a society. I am, as a historian, quite convinced of that. Obviously, if the freest country in the history of the world was created by a bunch of homeschoolers and they gave you the right to homeschool, there's got to be something there, huh? That's not accidental. It's pretty amazing. It's wonderful. And so we can all say, give silent thanks to the founding fathers for doing that. So, something to ponder. So now what I want to do with this example of this kind of progression of events from the Magna Carta 800 years ago to the signing of the Declaration and to us here and now homeschooling, is refocus on this definition. History is the study of the world we live in from the perspective of how it came to be, especially through human action. Right? The mistake that people make when they think about history is that it's about the past. they see something like the Magna Carta that is 800 years old, and they think that it doesn't have anything to do with them. Or at least, because of the way that most history teachers talk about it, they can't figure out what the connection is. So they end up thinking, history is the study of the past. When you're studying the Magna Carta, you're studying something that really only mattered to those people 800 years ago. Doesn't really matter today, does it? Should you walk around being thankful for the Magna Carta? How many people do that nowadays? One of the greatest things that ever happened on this planet. And we get to live in a better world because that happened. So if people think that history is the study of the past, that's really sad to me. That's really tragic because it's not true. Not if you do it right. The past is only half the truth of it. The present is the other half. The world we live in is that other half. And history is about making the connection. Which is one great reason why I love American history in particular. Because it's closer to us, right? It's studying ancient history can be wonderful. Studying Asian history can be wonderful. Studying, you know, other continents and other cultures and all that. That can be all wonderful. Believe me, I'm a historian. I love it. But American history is the closest story to us and to the United States in particular, which is absolutely, incontrovertibly, the most important country in the world. And so, that is really, that's a big deal. To be in a position to study about that is to learn more about the world that we live in than you can learn by studying any other story. I mean, yes, if you happen to live in Japan, then of course you need to study Japanese history to learn about the place where you are. But, and of course, if you live in France, you need to study French history. But if you want to understand the world, and here's what we're going to get into tomorrow. If you want to understand not just the country that you live in, or the state, or the city, or whatever, all of those things are good to know, right? But if you want to understand the world that you live in, there is the most important story that you can study is American history. Bar none. Bar none. So what we are going to do this year is going to be more closely linked to this definition than anything else we could possibly do. Everything that you study in the past, the right way to do it involves making connections between the past and the present. And looking for facts which are connected to the present. Which is what I have often said in the past to students in the course. Many of you will remember that Mr. Powell's definition, previous definition of history was more along the lines of, history is the study of the important people and events from the past. Right? You might remember that particular version of the story. Which is a good definition. It means that what we do is we choose the things that connect the past to the present. That's what important means. It means that it matters to us. It's worthy of our attention here and now. So that's a decent definition, but I still think that this one is better. I think that it's important to say that history is knowing about where we are here and now. It's not about the past. It's about the world around us. And if you can see it that way, then what you end up doing is you end up having this perspective where you look at the things that everybody else is seeing with their eyes, and what you see is the deeper dimension. When people look at your house, they see a house, but you see your home, There's a deeper dimension. When people look around, they see cars, they see homes, well, they see houses, they see skyscrapers, they see planes in the air, and so on. But if you can look at that historically, you can see the deeper dimension underneath it. If we study things like the American Revolution, you can see the freedom that makes those things possible. And you can see the science and technology that make those things possible, such as the Industrial Revolution. Those are all part of the story that we're going to study this year. And all of a sudden, this world that is pretty plain on the surface, I mean, it is wonderful, right? But it's amazing how people look at the world and don't feel how wonderful it is. It's amazing how people can look at the world and kind of be bored by it and not realize what there is to see. History can show us that deeper dimension. History can explain to us how this world we live in came to be what it is. And especially show us people acting in history and making the world into what it has become. That to me is really, really important. The world that we live in was in large part made and remade over and over again by human beings like you and me. And guess what? We're doing it right now. We are making the world into a different place than it would be by the very choice of being here together right now in homeschooling. Where you go in your life and what you end up doing with it, you know, obviously all that's going to be very personal and it's up to you. But you are definitely changing the course of your life by being here. What else can you do? What else can you do? History can show you. History shows us what human beings can do. We're not boring. We're not small. We're not insignificant. If you want another good example of it from American history, here you go. Just a sec, I'm trying to share. Oh wait, I think I did it wrong. I'll try it again. Whoever that is, get yourself muted, okay? Let's see, I gotta deal with a strange sound issue. Okay. Alright, there we go. So, this I love. Here's American history. I mean, how amazing is that? Right? Human beings have been off this earth. They have soared through space and they've walked on the moon. This was before you were born. That was actually before I was born. So I don't even remember this happening. So it's kind of amazing. We haven't been back there yet. But it has happened. It's absolutely astounding. History has got so much to show us about who we are. This is a part of the world that we live in. This is a part of the meaning of history. That Americans have walked on the moon. That's outrageous. That's amazing. So we'll get to that too. We'll get to the modern world. And hopefully the end result will be that you see the world in a different way. That's what it is. You won't be looking at the past. You'll be looking at the world around you and you will see it in a new way. You'll see the deeper dimensions that are a part of it rather than just the surface. And tomorrow, we're going to do exactly that. We're going to immediately dive right in to a special exercise to appreciate the complexity of the world that we live in and its deeper dimensions. So anyway, we're at the close of today's lecture. So I welcome any questions or comments. Otherwise, we can call it a day. All right, tomorrow we begin to look more closely at this world that we live in. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
Bye.
Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.